today as we come to the table.
Is there something here that, you know, we can do to numb this a little bit, I guess, or whatever the case might be? But I think about the Lord. He had all this pain that he was already in and all the pain he was about to take. And he said, no, I can't, because he had to take the full brunt. See, this is what's so heavy about our sin. He had to take the full brunt of what sin caused in order to forgive us fully. Now, you ever wonder the impact sin had on mankind? Think about what the Lord had to go through to pay for it. We think about small sin. Think about the impact this had. There's no small sin. And I love it, the fact that he took the full brunt of it. No, it's like, I don't want anything to drink.
As we read through the account of the crucifixion, we see that the guards offered Jesus a drink. This drink served as a kind of painkiller, but Jesus refused. He decided he was going to take on all the pain and all the cost for our sin. He spared nothing, and he didn't take any shortcuts when it came to fixing our relationship. Well, thanks for taking the time to join us as we come to the table. The Daily Bible Study Program of Mark Kirk, Senior Pastor of Calvary Knoxville. In today's message, Pastor Mark will be sharing about some of the details as to what happened on the cross. This was a pivotal moment in history and in our faith that we can often miss or overlook certain specific sections. The more we study what happened on the cross, the greater appreciation we can have towards salvation. Now, let's join Pastor Mark in the book of Matthew, chapter 27, as he continues his message, Jesus' Death on the Cross.
He's traveling all this distance to come and worship the God of Israel. Whether or not he was a Jew, whether or not he was a believer, you know, we know that no doubt he was a believer coming to celebrate Passover and the God of Israel or whatever, but he's coming to do this way. And the last thing he wants to do is end up in some mess where he's carrying this guy's cross to be crucified. Imagine, he probably saw the stir that was happening. He runs over there to see what's going on, right? And he sees what's happening, and all of a sudden, that's right when the Lord falls, and they grab him and say, get over and take his cross. Now, there would have been a number of things about this that would have been very discouraging for Simon. First of all, he wouldn't have been wanting to do that. He came to celebrate the Passover, not help some criminal, which he would have thought at this point, this is obviously some wicked man. Why would I have to be the one called to help him? But also note this, this would have Levitically defiled him. He would have now had this man's blood on him, and he would have been Levitically defiled. He traveled all that distance, and he wouldn't have been able to celebrate the Passover. Now think about that, guys. It's not like jumping on a plane today. Can you imagine jumping on a plane, flying somewhere for some special celebration you're going to do, and you get there and you become defiled by your religious beliefs and go, man, I can't even celebrate it. All right, guys, I'll see you. I hope you guys have a great time celebrating. I'm heading back home. No, this is okay. It's time to walk back, get the boat, go back across the ocean and go back home and wait until next year. And I can imagine how discouraged at this point Simon would have been, thinking I've been defiled by this man's blood. And yet, ironically, he was probably the cleanest of anyone there. Because he was the only one that truly had the real blood of the real Passover lamb on his body. Can you imagine? I've oftentimes imagined being at the foot of the cross and being able to take one drop and just put it on myself. You know, oftentimes when I'm confessing sin, I'll just imagine, Lord, if I could just, you know, just one drop, right? He had the Lord's blood all over him. And while he's thinking, what a horrible thing, can you imagine when he realized how wonderful it really yet was? Again, how it hit him later. The Bible tells us that Simon ended up getting saved. By the way, he would have gone all the way to the cross. He would have seen the crucifixion. He would have been there and seen it all. And if you imagine when he saw what the Lord did and how the Lord did it, and then going back home and thinking about it, and then finding out that he raised from the dead, and then, Lord, you were truly the one, and then realizing, and you let me carry your cross. Can you imagine the emotions? Can you imagine the thought of, on my back was your blood. I shouldn't have showered. I thought I've got this gross blood on me, but it was the precious blood of the universe that every human has been forgiven through on me. And then, you know, we don't know when he got saved. Was it before he got home? Can you imagine if it, whether it was or wasn't, he gets home, you know, and honey, what happened? Why are you, you know, sit down, you got to hear, you know. It tells us in Acts that his sons got saved as well. His whole family got saved. And so they were active in the church. They were serving along with Paul and Silas, it tells us in Acts. And so this was something that had a major impact on the entire family. But just try to imagine this. Again, his thought process at the moment and yet what was really happening. And notice verse 33. And when they'd come to the place called Golgotha, which means the place of the skull, that is to say the place of the skull, they gave him sour wine mingled with gall to drink. But when he had tasted it, he would not drink. Now, this is really loaded. There's a lot here. First of all, this place of the skull, although greatly eroded after 2,000 years, you can still see it today. On the last day of our Israel trips, we go to Golgotha and to the tomb. And you can still see, next to Gordon's tomb, which they call as the tomb where the Lord was placed, you can see there in the rock this place that still looks like a skull. Now, if you look at pictures back in the early 1900s, there are some pictures there. It looks more like a skull at that time. It's eroded some more then, but after 2,000 years, you can still tell that it's a skull. And that would have been a very appropriate place to put the crosses, kind of, you know, symbolic, here's a skull, we're killing these people and all this whatever. Many believe that's where Jeremiah sat doing Lamentations when he was looking over Jerusalem as God judged them, went to this place and sat in this very grotto or this place, this skull, if you will. But again, depicting, I believe, the place exactly where the Lord was crucified. Also, the tomb being right there next to him, which we'll get to a little bit later. And it was right next to the road, again, which makes sense when we see later everybody coming by and mocking him and making fun of him as they came by. And notice they gave him wine with gall to drink. This was, if you will, an ancient painkiller. There was a group of women called the Merciful Women in that day that would go around, and they would try to give those that were being crucified a painkiller. They had mercy on them. And they would mix this gall, or this myrrh, if you will, with wine and make this kind of painkiller concoction. And they would let them drink it so that it wouldn't be as painful during the crucifixion, at least initially. And by the way, that wouldn't have felt very long. Crucifixion typically took days for you to die. I think as far as the fastest recorded crucifixion of death besides Jesus was 30-some hours. And I think the longest was something like 13 days. So horrific. Hard to even imagine. When you were crucified, they'd put you about 2 feet off the ground, and they said in the evening the animals would come out. I don't need to go any farther in details than that. The birds of the air would also wreak havoc on the victims. And so it was a horrible way to go. It was intended to be the most painful thing you could imagine. It was designed for that. That was the purpose behind it in this design. It was actually designed, came out of, you know, they didn't have crucifixion when it was written about in the Psalms, but it was prophesied about. It was actually developed in Persia. And the reason they did the crucifixion was they worshiped the earth. Imagine that. Anybody worshiping the earth? That's hard to fathom today, isn't it? And so they didn't want the victims and those they hated to touch Mother Earth while they killed them. So they decided to hang them up off of the ground in their death. And so it carried on. The Romans thought, well, this is a great way to torture people. We like this. So they carried it on and brought it to where it was in that day and really, I guess you would say, perfected it. But he wouldn't drink it. I love this. Notice this. Why wouldn't he drink it? Because the Lord could not allow any of the pain to be deadened in order to pay for all of our pain. Isn't that amazing? I mean, I don't like pain. I don't know of anybody that does. But I really don't like it. You know, if it's going to be surgery or there's going to be some procedure, I mean, it could just be a few stitches. And I'm wondering, okay, is there something here that, you know, we can do to numb this a little bit? And I guess, or whatever the case might be. But I think about the Lord. He had all this pain that he was already in and all the pain he was about to take. And he said, no, I can't, because he had to take the full brunt. See, this is what's so heavy about our sin. He had to take the full brunt of what sin caused in order to forgive us fully. Now, you ever wonder the impact sin had on mankind? Think about what the Lord had to go through to pay for it. We think about small sin. Think about the impact this had. There's no small sin. And I love it, the fact that he took the full brunt of it. No, it's like, I don't want anything to drink. I don't want anything to deaden the pain. No painkillers. Then they crucified him. And they divided his garments, casting lots that it might be fulfilled, which was spoken by the prophet. They divided my garments among them, and for my clothing they cast lots. Again, first in crucifying, they would have laid him on this vertical beam. They would have had the vertical beams up there waiting. That is the up and down, waiting on him. The one horizontal would have been on him. Our soldiers would have placed the other part up there. And there would have already been a hole dug in the ground. So what they would do is they would take the victim, they would lay them down on the long beam this way. They would take the top beam off their shoulders and fit it to that. It was cut to where it would fit. They'd put him on there, then tie his arms to it. And then once his arms were tied to it, they'd then drive the nails in. And they would drive the nails in the wrist area right here between the bones, which, by the way, in that day, they considered the hand. That was considered your hand in that day. Very commonly called the hand was your wrist. So when it talks about driving the nails in his hand, it would have probably been more in his wrist, although it probably could have held in the hand because they tied them there with ropes. And I'll let the scholars fight that one out. But it would appear it was driven there where these nerves are, again, to cause more pain between these bones and also to make you more firm while you were hanging on the cross. Wasn't that nice? And they would tie the arms there and then nail your legs together. You put one over the top of the other like that, and they'd nail through the top to keep you to the cross. And then they would lift you up and drop you down in a hole that was cut for the bottom of it to hold it in place. So imagine the pain of being nailed, then lifting up and the sudden thud of being dropped down in that hole. Imagine what this did. Again, we'll get into the psalm that talks a little bit more about this and give you a little bit more picture of what the Lord was going through, because the Bible tells us in great detail what they were doing. But what's amazing is in the scripture, another gospel tells us that as they did this, he was saying, Father, forgive them. They know not what they do. And again, many believe this was happening while they were nailing him to the cross, that he was saying, Father, forgive them. And if indeed it was, it's interesting because in the language, it means he was repeating it. They're nailing him, and over he's saying, Father, forgive them. They know not what they do. Father, forgive them. They know not what they do. Now you know why some of those soldiers got saved, and we know what happened in the praetorium, because they couldn't live with themselves. This haunted them until they ran to the cross themselves. And so, again, I guarantee you this was the first time any Roman soldier ever heard anybody say this. And imagine the impact later as it sunk in to their heart and their mind, exactly what happened here. Again, during this time, the pain was so excruciating, not only from the initial crucifixion, but from the nails that they put in the body, that you had to push yourself up to breathe. You already had the nails and everything in you, but what you have to do is you had to hold yourself up to breathe, because the way you were done, you would drop like this and it would squeeze your lungs off. So you'd push yourself up for a breath, and for a while you could do that and endure the pain, but after a while, the pain would get so excruciating, sometimes you had to decide, is it worth breathing or not? Is it worth pushing up on the nails, or do I just try to just suffocate? And that's why some would continue to have a lot of strength and make it for days and days. Again, no doubt the one that made it 13 days was probably not scourged, if you will. And so actually being scourged may have been a blessing in disguise in some ways, although extremely excruciating. You would have probably died sooner. And eventually you would just get so tired you couldn't push yourself up anymore. You would collapse and then you would die. And so part of the whole process here, notice it says they divided his garments, and they cast lots. What the soldiers would do if you wore something that was worth anything. And again, it was told that Jesus had a garment that only had a single hole in the head, which made it a little bit more valuable of a garment, probably a gift that someone gave him. So they would cast lots for it. We must say roll the dice to see who gets it and get a hold of that. And so they did that. And again, why did they do it? Because it was prophesied. Again, notice what it says. They divided my garments among them, and for my clothing they cast lots. Again, everything that was said about the Lord had to take place. And again, this is why it's so absurd for anybody that says, you know, this is something that the Lord just did, and he planned it because he knew the Bible said it, and he wanted to look like the Messiah. How ridiculous. How could you make the soldiers do everything the Bible said they were going to do? Impossible. I mean, you think about how hard it was to take a breath and how hard it was to even speak. Again, they said that your mouth would get so dry that your tongue would swell up and almost fill your mouth. It would stick to your jaws. It talks about that in Psalm 22 when it describes what he was going through. And so you would make your words very spare. There's only 7 statements the Lord made from the cross. And now you see why he made such short statements and only things that had to be said. That's a whole study in itself. It's looking at the things the Lord said from the cross, because he only could get so many breaths to do it. And again, it's prophesied, even as they said would take place. And notice the Roman guards there, verse 36, sitting down, they kept watch over him there, and they put up over his head an accusation written against him, King of the Jews, or rather, this is Jesus, the King of the Jews. Now, again, it's interesting. Why would they have the Roman soldiers sitting there? You think about that. They just nailed him to a cross, and now the guards, they had to stay there until he died. And they would do that. The Roman guards would stay there until the one they were guarding died. Why? So no one would come and take the body down. So no one would come and rescue them. You know, if they were their friends might show up and take them down off the cross, and I guess theoretically they might even have a chance to live. So the Roman guards would stay there and guard until they completely died. But again, now they put the accusation over him that this is Jesus, the King of the Jews. Again, this was very common when it came to crucifixions. They would make a sign stating the guilt of whatever the criminal had done. They'd march it in front of them as they were heading to the cross. And then when they got to the cross, they would hang it above them, you know, to show what they had done. Now, this is interesting because, again, the crime he's committed of was, saying he committed was actually the truth. He was the King of the Jews. So they made a true statement, which again, another gospel tells us. They say, don't write that he's the King of the Jews, but he said, I'm the King of the Jews. And Pilate said, what I've written, I've written. You know, he is the King of the Jews, and so you deal with it. But it also shows us the type of cross that the Lord was crucified on. It's interesting. You look at commentaries, and for those of you that do commentary studies and do all this stuff, and I encourage that, you'll find that there's different opinions. You know, there were different crosses in that day. There were X-shaped crosses. We know that Peter was crucified on an X-shaped cross, upside down, because when they brought him to be crucified, he said, I'm not worthy that he'd be crucified right side up, so flip me over. Wow, can't imagine what that was like. Horrific either way. Then there was a T-shaped cross, which for whatever reason the Mormons want to push and say that's what Jesus was crucified on. Then there was the cross that extended up above the head and went out both ways. We know it was the cross that extended above the head and went out both ways because there would be nowhere to hang the sign. So you had to have a place to hang the sign above his head that said, this is Jesus, the King of the Jews. So again, we know what kind of cross it was. And so it's hanging over him, making this proclamation. Again, another gospel tells us it was written in three different languages, the languages of the day, so that everyone would know, Greek, Latin, and Hebrew, that this was Jesus, the King of the Jews. And notice verse 38, then the two robbers were crucified with him, one on the right hand and the other on the left. And again, this was prophesied as well, that Jesus would die among those, you know, the wicked, the guilty, if you will. And no doubt, the cross was intended, as we said earlier, for Barabbas, and these were probably for his accomplices. It is interesting, they chose Barabbas instead of the Lord. Remember, we talked about his name last week, it means son of the father. So you had one son of the father to choose, or another son of the father. You had the real son of the father, or a fake son of the father. And they chose the fake son of the father. Jesus said in the last days, the Jews will do the exact same thing. They will choose the last days Barabbas, the one instead of Jesus Christ, the Antichrist. And by the way, anti means instead of. And even as the Jews made the same mistake 2,000 years ago, the Bible tells us when the Antichrist comes on the scene, the one that claims to be the Son of God, or God himself, if you will, they're going to still choose the wrong one, the Antichrist, instead of the real Christ, the imposter, the substitute. In John 5:43, Jesus said they were rejecting, when they rejected him, they were going to accept another that would come after him. And this, of course, was speaking of the Antichrist, which is, again, I think a picture of Barabbas in this right now. And notice it says, verse 39, and those who passed by blasphemed him, wagging their heads and saying, you who destroyed the temple and build it in 3 days, save yourself. If you're the Son of God, come down from the cross. And notice this, even as the Roman soldiers mocked him, we see the religious leaders of that day mocking him, and we'll see the soldiers mocking him. Everybody mocked him. And again, it's very appropriate because he died for the sins of the world, and people from all over the world came to the Passover. So it wouldn't have just been the Jews. It would have been people from all over the world. Simon himself was from Libya. Also, the Roman soldiers that were serving Pilate, they were from all over the world. And so it's a picture here of the world mocking the Lord, the entire world putting him to death. And as we said before, it wasn't the Jews that put the Lord to death. It was me. I killed him. If you want to blame anybody, tell them it's that pastor at Calvary Chapel. Because it's my sin that sent him to the cross. Bad news is, it's your sin too. So you're just as guilty. I don't think I'll keep your name back the way Jesus did. I'm going to say, no, they're guilty too. I'm just kidding. But again, their accusation is precisely the reason. Notice what goes on. They say to him here, look at verse 41. It says, likewise, the chief priests also mocking and the scribes and elders said, he saved others. Himself he cannot save. If he's the King of Israel, let him come down now from the cross and we will believe him. Again, this is interesting to me because the accusation is precisely the reason that he couldn't come down from the cross, because if he saved himself, he couldn't save us. That's the whole point. He saved us. He couldn't save himself. They didn't get it. They didn't understand that. We know that. And again, even if it had come down from the cross, they wouldn't have believed it, because if they didn't believe when he healed the blind and the dead, and those that resurrected, they certainly wouldn't believe this. And notice they say, he trusted in God, let him deliver him now if he will have him. For he said, I am the Son of God. And even the robbers who were crucified with him reviled him with the same thing. Isn't it interesting that these two robbers We're both lost and condemned sinners, and yet both started out condemned on either side of the Lord, but before we're done, one's going to be in paradise and one's going to be in Hades. Both of them just as condemned, both of them just as guilty. What was the difference? One repented and one rejected. Guys, what a warning that is for us. Listen, I know that probably most of us here, you probably know the Lord, but it might be that some of you don't. Maybe somebody invited you. Maybe for whatever the reason, you've just kind of been playing church. Listen, it's no different than the two robbers hanging on the cross. The other gospel tells us that even they were both at one point mocking the Lord. They were joining in on this whole situation with the Lord. And finally, one of them, it just finally clicked. You know, you wonder if like the soldiers that were watching Jesus, this guy didn't finally look at him and just say, why is he taking all this? He's not angry. He's not yelling back. He's not defending himself. And again, we're going to see when we get into next week, the fact that everything goes dark. Again, I wish I could get there. I've got a whole section I want to jump into, but I'm not going to jump into it. I'd rather quit a little bit early than try to jump into it because there's so much in this next section. But by the time this whole scene and episode is done, he is so convinced that he's the Messiah, the Christ, that he says, Lord, when you come into your kingdom, remember me. And he said, today you will be with me in paradise. Isn't that amazing? Guys, listen, here's the point. It's never too late if your heart is moved to receive the Lord. And if you're in that place and you hear the voice of the Lord saying to you, now I've come for you, confess your sin and believe in me, you can be saved and be with the Lord in paradise. I mean, again, I look at just God's grace and God's mercy on this man. By the way, it also kind of, for those who say that, and I don't want to in any way belittle baptism. Baptism is a command of the Lord. Baptism is, you know, communion and baptism, one of the two things the Lord told us we're to be doing. But so many people get wrapped up in religious rituals and, you know, you've got to be baptized to be saved. Well, tell that to the man on the cross. He certainly wasn't baptized. But Jesus said, today you will be with me in the kingdom. Now, I'm not saying that to give anybody an excuse out of baptism. If you've not been baptized, here's what the Lord would say to you tonight. Get baptized because you need to be obedient to the Lord. But at the same time, don't get caught up in the religious things that people try to tell you that you need to do to be saved. You see, Jesus did it all on the cross. And again, how I wish I could have gone farther because it seems just weird kind of breaking this up in this segment. I want to go all the way through, but too much to cover. We'll just wait. We'll finish it next week. But I want you to know this. There's nothing you can do to earn your way in the kingdom. I know that probably most of you already know that. But if there's somebody here trying to earn your way in the kingdom, it is so thoroughly done. As a matter of fact, next we're going to really talk about the fact that really it's an insult to try to think you have to do something to earn your way in the kingdom. Because when you say you've got to do something or think you can do something to get into the kingdom, you're saying that what Jesus did wasn't enough and it didn't finish it. But what did he say from the cross? It is finished. It is done. And so, again, we'll get into that more next week. If you don't know the Lord, the Holy Spirit's been talking to you if you don't know him. Hopefully he's been talking to you if you do know him as well. But if you don't know the Lord, I know that he's been talking to you. Respond. This is your moment. You think about it. I mean, I guess we'd all agree, the man on the cross, we'd all say, yeah, we know for sure that was his last chance, right? But how do you know this is not your last chance? How do you know this is not your last moment to give that opportunity? Again, I'm not trying to use scare tactics. That's not the point. But guys, we never know. And the Lord may be saying to you, this is your moment. Make your decision.
It's always a blessing to have you come to the table of God's Word with us each and every day on this station. Say, wasn't that message great? Pastor Mark is helping us follow the journey of Jesus through the book of Matthew. And along the way, we're finding great highs and very low lows. Jesus will be worshiped by the people, but also beaten and killed by the authorities. But we know that in the kingdom of God, everything gets turned upside down because the lowest moment in the life of Jesus was also his greatest triumph, thanks to him conquering sin and death on the cross. And in the end, we will see him rise. But he doesn't leave it at that. Before he returns to heaven, he has a commission for you and me that we find in Matthew 28, verses 18 through 20. All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Go therefore and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all that I have commanded you. And behold, I am with you always to the end of the age. Since we know the end of the story and we know that we're called to make disciples, let's lean into the teachings and commands of Jesus along the way. Now, if you missed any part of this message, you can always go back and find it at thewaymedia.net under the Come to the Table section, or just download the Way Media app from the Apple App Store or Google Play Store and take us wherever you go. And while you go out to make disciples, save another half hour for us as we'll continue to go verse by verse through the book of Matthew the next time we come to the table. Come to the Table is a radio outreach ministry of Calvary Knoxville.